Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Shape Good Sheared podcast. We got a good show going on for you today. First thing you might have been startled by is the title of today's show. It's called Islamofascism Exposed. Now, I want to make one thing very clear before we really get into the meat and potatoes of the discussion today. Number one, I want to quote Winston Churchill again, because I've quoted him on the show multiple times before, but I think it's important that I do so to set the record straight. Number one, I don't think that every Muslim is evil. I want to put that out there. Number two, I think it is the influence of the religion that is what causes a lot of the problems that we're going to discuss in today's show, what ranging from Israel to the growing tensions, which, you know, I did not see this coming. I didn't see the India versus Pakistan problem coming to a head at this period of time. I mean, I know the history of the region, Mahatma Gandhi's role in it, the over a million people that unfortunately perished in the forming of the modern state of Pakistan. I know all about it. But what's sad is I didn't see this coming to a head right now. But then again, the Muslims are on the rise all over. When I say Muslims, I mean the radical ones, the jihadi ones. But, you know, I've also heard from people who grew up in the Middle East, or from Syria, Lebanon, etc., that there is no such thing as radical versus non-radical, because according to the Quran, they're allowed to lie to you if you're an infidel. So I'll start the show over again. Hello, infidels. Welcome to the Sheep Get Sheared podcast. We're going to discuss Islamofascism and how it's affecting the world around us. Now, Islamofascism, let's split that apart for a second. Islamo and then fascism. What is fascism? Fascism comes from the Italian word fascisti, which means stick. It means to rule by force, through the threat of force. Now, this is no more shown if you look at Iran. And we're going to jump all over the place throughout today's show, because it's all about the religious conflicts that are coming all from around the world, whether it be the Jews versus the Muslims, the Hindus versus the Muslims, the Christians versus the Muslims. Islam is at war with everybody all around the world. Wherever you look around the country, not around the country, you could say the country of America, but around the world in general, 9 out of 10 times it's a Muslim attacking his neighbor, or who wants to either kill or convert his neighbor. I know you hate to hear that. I know you kind of got like a chill. You got like a, ugh, I don't like that he said that. That's kind of gross. I hate hearing that. You might have felt that just now. That's okay. That is totally normal, because you've been taught the opposite. You've been taught that, in fact, it's the Christians' fault for the Crusades, that it's the Jews' fault for all the deaths that we're seeing in Palestine. All of it's not true. In fact, do you know how many AI images there are out there about so-called Jewish shoulder Israeli defense forces hurting these poor innocent kids and starving them to death? There's a lot of them out there, and they're pushed as fact. You know, the people on Twitter, and I'm on Twitter quite a bit, that's why I bring it up all the time. There are a lot of very pro-Palestine people on there, and then now all of a sudden they're siding with Pakistan, and it got me thinking to myself, wait a minute. They don't actually support Palestine or Pakistan. They just support Muslims. They're shills for the Islamo-fascist Democrat machine. For anybody who's not been aware for the past several decades, we've seen this very awkward behind-the-door handshake between the more progressive socialist elements of the Democrat Party mixing with the very pro-Islamic, you know, front groups, in my estimation, and spokesmouths kind of working together against the independents and against the Republicans. But when you look at the root of both conflicts that are happening in front of our eyes, it's about religion. It's always been about religion, because Islam has been at war with the world since its founding. And to prove it to you, we're going to discuss what happened after the death of Muhammad, the prophet, and how the world was forever changed. So first, you need to know who Muhammad was. Muhammad was not Gandhi. He was not Mother Teresa wrapped into one. He wasn't like Jesus. He wasn't like Moses. Muhammad was a warlord who had multiple marriages at the same time, who killed an entire tribe of Jews in cold blood and took their wives and children as sex slaves. Muhammad was also a man who married a 9-year-old girl. He was not a peace-loving person that they hold him up as. He was a very flawed egomaniac, in my opinion. But the problem is, he is the standard. He is the standard for what Muslims believe. He is the equivalent of Jesus for the Christians in a lot of ways. Not when it comes to divinity per se, but when it comes to the example that you are supposed to follow. And there is no comparison in my mind. Zero. None. Because here's what happened after his death. After the death of the Prophet Muhammad in the year 632 CE or BC, the Islamic world underwent a rapid expanse. Was it through sharing ideas? Was it through trade? Was it through walking town to town and talking about the religion? No. In 632 AD, the rapid expanse was through military conquest and political consideration. They formed a caliphate. Oh, yes. You mean like the one they're actively trying to form in the Middle East today? Yes. Yes, the very thing. This was not only a religious movement, but also a political juggernaut, a geopolitical juggernaut at that, that reshaped the Middle East, North Africa, as well as Asia and parts of Europe. Oh, you didn't know that, did you? You didn't know that Spain, the Battle of Tours, Spain was almost overwhelmingly Muslim. They even went almost all the way into France. You didn't know about this, did you? Oh, you didn't. Because you were taught that they're minorities, that they're victims. And that the only reason we see groups like Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, the reason we only see these groups is because of those evil Christians and those evil Westerners who come in there and take their oil and leave and ruin their countries. When in fact, no. This is nothing new, my friends. This is as old as, 1,500 almost years ago? This has been going on ever since. Now, like I said before, there are redeeming qualities of the actual religion itself. But here's the problem. The influence of the religion on the masses, especially the unwashed, uneducated losers, is what causes the problem. Because I've said that on a show before. There is Reformed Judaism. There is Protestant and Catholic Christians. There was a Reformation by a man named Martin Luther in the Christian church. There was a revolution / reformation of Judaism when the rabbis said, hey, guess what? We can't be following this to the T anymore. We live in the modern world. Islam doesn't have that. They never had a reformation. In fact, not only did they not have a reformation, they have radicals who actively go out there and do what the Quran says. They're 8th century throwbacks instead of getting up to the modern day. They're trying to drag the rest of the world back with Sharia law. And the Sunni and the Shiites can trace their lineage back to this succession problem that happened after Muhammad's death. You might not know that. But not every Muslim country is the same. In fact, there's Sunni, there's Shiite, and there's a couple extra ones. There's a couple more, but they're less popular and we won't really get into them as much. But the first caliph was Abu Bakr, who was a close companion of Muhammad the Prophet. He launched the Ridda Wars to suppress the Arab tribes that renounced Islam after the death of Muhammad and reunified the Arabian Peninsula after the death of Muhammad to centralize Islamic control over the region. My friends, this then would spread all throughout North Africa, all throughout the Byzantine Empire at the time, which is now modern-day Turkey. Oh, you didn't know that? You didn't know that Turkey wasn't always Muslim? Egypt wasn't always Muslim? Middle East was not Muslim forever, by the way. is actually mostly Zoroastrian, Christian, and Jewish, if in case you wanted to know. But not as much anymore. Why? Because guess what? They get persecuted for it. You can't live like that. My friends, the expansion is the second most bloody and rapid expansion in the history of the human race, other than the Mongols. Genghis Khan, to my knowledge, was the only one who surpassed this very conquest. And that tells you something. Now, admittedly, there was a time of great learning, of a golden age, so to speak, during the Islamic rule after this conquest happened. In the same way that there was during the Mongol reign. There was a time when the Jewish mind and the Arab mind met with the Chinese mind and it had a beautiful harmony. There was a time when that happened. But that time doesn't exist anymore. That time is long over. All you gotta do is look now at the people who are running a lot of the Muslim countries. For example, you look at Jordan. Jordan's a I'm getting tongue-tied. You look at Jordan. Jordan is run by the king, and he's a very reasonable man. Is he a saint? No. But he is an ally of America. He's an ally of the West. He's a very modern Islamic man. He's not a throwback he's not like the mullahs of Iran, who took Iran from a very modern nation and a lily in the oasis of the greater desert, which is the Middle East. And before you knew it, it was plunged back into the 8th century by the throwbacks. Same thing to do with Afghanistan. Afghanistan was once a place where women could learn to be wherever they wanted to, in the same way that Iran was. Now, they can't even go past middle school. You know, I find it very ironic, and I've said this... Oh God, how many times have I said this on the show? I find it ironic that the so-called, fifth, sixth wave feminists, they'd rather attack guys like me than attack the actual misogynists in the world who say that women are less than dogs. They treat women like cows in a field meant to be bred on an industrial level. And instead of saying, hey, we need to talk about real problems in the world, we need to say, hey, these people in the Middle East, these people in Afghanistan, we need to call these people out and say, hey, you can't treat women like this. Women are people and they deserve rights. They won't go there and tell them that. Why? Because they'll get their head cut off. But they won't do it. Or they can't say in Saudi Arabia because the king will give us oil money anymore. So what do they do instead? They tell you that you're a pig. They tell you you're the problem. Because they're not brave. They're brave, they go to the king of Saudi Arabia. They go to the Taliban and tell them, hey, the way you treat women is unacceptable, which it is. But they don't do that. And it just goes to show why this brand of fascism, this brand of religious fascism, is largely not being condemned by a lot of people in the world because they're scared of it, number one, or number two, because they don't know enough about it. Let's go back to the conquests we were just talking about, shall we? So the speed and scale, let's get down to some brass numbers. I know you want to hear numbers. Let's get down to that. Within 100 years of Muhammad's death, Islam spread from Arabia to Spain in the West and India in the East. So now you see how everything's coming full circle, right? Do you know why Pakistan was formed? Probably we don't. That's okay. A lot of history classes don't teach that. Pakistan was formed, actually, through the workings of Mahatma Gandhi. You might have heard of him, the peacenik. The Hindus and the Muslims have a very complicated past. In fact, it's not very friendly. It's quite bloody, actually. The Persians and the Indians, elephants, wars, tons of bloodshed. It's very, very extraneous. If you ask Hindi people, you ask Pakistani people, they know this history very well because it's taught to them. It's not taught to Americans unless they happen to be from India or Pakistan, or they're like me and they care about these things and they love history. The problem is, it got so bad, the relations, that the Indian government decided, hey, we got to push these people out. There's too much turmoil here. we're going to give them a piece of India, and we got to go our separate ways. But of course, it wasn't that easy. People don't just leave their homes. People don't just leave where they grew up, where their grandfather grew up, where their father grew up. They don't just pick up and leave. But of course, they were forced to anyway, which then caused over 1 million deaths as they were forcibly removed from India. Now, am I saying that's right? No, I'm saying it happened. And that's why we see what we're seeing today. In the words of Barry Goldwater, a long-forgotten politician by all too many in this country, because he never actually got to the presidency, which in my opinion, he would have been a great president. He's very famous for saying that, the following. He said, "I would remind you that extremism and the defense of liberty is no vice. And I would also remind you that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue." I might need to repeat that in case you missed it. That's a lot to chew on. It's a very simple statement, but it's incredibly powerful. Extremism and the defense of liberty is no vice. What does that mean? It means that an extreme reaction to defend your liberty is not evil. It is not bad. It is not sinful. And that moderation in the pursuit of achieving a just result is not virtuous. It is not something that you should be commended for. And sometimes, my friends, that is what happens in the West. We like to take the high road. We like to say, you know what? We got to be better than the people who want to kill us. We got to be better than the people who are trying to subvert and destroy us from within. We have to be better than them and beat them at the same time. And I say, you got to have really one or the other. You can't beat someone fighting dirty. This isn't a movie. This is real life, unfortunately. I wish it was a movie where the guy who's right wins because he's right. No, that's not the world we live in. The world we live in is whoever wins, whether they're right or not, tells the story to the kids and their kids' kids, telling them that they were right because of this, that, and the other thing, and the other person was wrong, and they can't defend themselves because they're dead. That's the world we live in. The person who loses doesn't get to tell their story. Their story is told 1,000 years later, if they can even make it that far. Because they get dug up by some British historian guy who puts it in a museum. Throughout this entire conquest, they created one of the largest empires in human history. And they set the stage for what I told you, the later golden ages of Islam, where technology, science, and philosophy and trade did flourish. This is true. It did. The problem is, we don't see a lot of this happening today. The people who, like the King of Jordan, for example, the King of Saudi Arabia, who's kind of in the middle, not nearly the extent that Jordan is, they have the capacity to be this type of Muslim leader. The problem is, they are not the majority anymore. There was a time where they were, but they're not anymore. Now we see the throwbacks. We have imams in America, in Britain, in Germany, in France, talking about how the infidels need to be crushed. It's time for Islam to conquer the world. Not, hey, it's time for us to come together and unite in the name of peace, justice, and love. You don't hear that coming out of the Islamic world, not that I see. I wish it was, frankly, but it's not. It only tends to happen after tons of people are put to the sword and they already rule everything. I'm not willing to take that risk, are you? All you gotta do is look at the Ottoman Empire and the evolution of it. It went from being tons of people being put to the sword to a mini golden age to Greeks being put in churches and being burned alive for being Christians. You can't negotiate with terrorists in the same way that you can't negotiate from a strong position. It all goes back. Speaking of the Greeks, there's a Greek phrase that's very pregnant with meaning throughout all of human history. Is that the strong take what they can, the weak suffer what they must. And that is no more magnified and shown in front of our eyes on a widescreen in HD than in the wars we're seeing unfolding, whether it be Russia and Ukraine, Israel and Palestine, the unfortunately escalating India and Pakistan conflict that's now metastasizing in front of our eyes. There was a time in history where people would understand the history after the fact. But now we have the chance to know the history ahead of time. But instead, with so much money being made off of hatred, so much money being made on fake news, people would rather focus on how it makes them feel or who is saying it. They like who's saying it, they'll agree with it. They don't like it, they don't want to hear it. They like how it makes them feel, they'll listen. If they don't like the message or how it's said, despite its merit or lack thereof, they'll toss it aside. We need to be better. We need to be better, otherwise, guess what? We become the very thing that we sought to destroy, which was ignorant, uneducated, and a liability to society. That's why we need to point out the hypocrisy. You can't be the victim while actively trying to destroy. And that's the problem that we're seeing in the Middle East, especially with Israel and Palestine. The Palestinians are saying they're victims. They are victims. It's none of Israel. They're victims of Hamas. But the problem is, I haven't heard anybody talk about, hey, where's the Hamas leadership? We need to hold them accountable. Where's the United Nations? Where's the world court system? Where are people saying we need to get these people before the world and have them atone for their crimes? I don't hear anybody saying that. All I hear is Israel's a terrorist state and the Jews are evil. Same rhetoric that came out of old AH about 100 years ago. You know, all the crypto, it's interesting. I was listening to an old clip. I like to listen to old clips from shows, from like talk shows and news feeds and everything from like 20 years ago, because I was too young to listen to it when it came out for the first time, because 20 years ago I was 5. I would not have had the patience nor the ability to understand what they were talking about. And so when I listen to people like Michael Savage, for example, when he talks about the crypto fascists who, for example, people who support Ron Paul and the crypto fascists out there who pretend to be Republicans, they pretend to be libertarians, they pretend to be good Christian people, meanwhile they actually hate Jews, meanwhile they actually just hate everybody around them who's not like them, the very thing that they hate, say that they hate, whether it be from Black people, Hispanic people, from Muslims, from Hindus, well, it doesn't matter. They're the very thing that they sought to destroy. They're coming out in droves. As soon as the Israel and Palestine conflict came out, all the crypto anti-Semites came out of the woodwork like termites out of a woodshed, dispersing before the exterminator showed up. The clean house. They scurried out of there as fast as they could. And the problem is, he was right when he said that as soon as you see a conflict in Israel, all the fake Republicans, all the fake libertarians who are really just Nazis are going to show up out of nowhere. You're going to see people you liked and respected all of a sudden going to be like, what? Who are you? I did not see this coming. The people who say the Jews are the problem, the people who say that every problem in the world is based on the Jews, that's a stereotype. But yet here you saw them out in droves. I can't wait to see what's going to happen next with all the people who were defending Indians in America and the H-1B visas and all this stuff coming out in droves against them in this upcoming conflict between India and Pakistan. I can't wait to see how that's going to play out. Because a lot of people are a lot more knowledgeable about the Israel and Gaza situation than they are about Pakistan and India. Most people could care less. All they know is that India was once a colony of Britain and that's about it. They don't really know much else. Or a lot of people come here and work for Google and Microsoft. That's really all they know. They don't know much else. Nor do they care, frankly. But unfortunately, they're going to start caring real quick because all of a sudden, every talking head on CNN, MSNBC, all the alphabet channels, they're going to come out in droves talking about this. Why? Because they could pin it on Trump. Because Trump's the evil orange man, and anything that doesn't go the way it's supposed to go in their heads, it's got to be his fault. Why? Because old Chameleon Harris lost. Because if she is president right now, I could guarantee you they would be talking about how, oh, well, you see, if Donald Trump was in office, half of the world would have been nuked already. So
We're already off in a better spot despite the fact that wars are breaking out across the world. It's all about how you want to see things. And it's inevitable that religious conflicts are going to happen because they have happened throughout history. Problem is, we didn't have a video camera. We didn't have reporters. We didn't have satellite technology to watch it unfolding in front of our eyes. You only knew about it if you lived there or you were running away from it and you were immigrating to somewhere else. I'm curious myself to see how the fake supporters of, like, all the people who are pro-Palestine, I'm finding out more and more they're not really pro-Palestine. There's anti-Jew and anti-Hindu. They're just pro-Muslim in plain English. They're not actually unbiased by any extent. Nobody really is. I want to make that clear. But I don't pretend to be unbiased. I'm very biased. And I make it very obvious. Unfortunately, most people don't do that. They pretend like they're unbiased, but in fact, they're the furthest thing from it. My friends, I'm curious if you know the history of Israel, Gaza, Palestine, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan. I'm curious if you know any of this history, because this history is untold in a lot of schools. A lot of people don't know it because it's not relevant to them. They don't understand the Crusades. They don't understand the expansion of Islam. They don't understand the Battle of Tours. They don't understand any of those things because it's not relevant to their lives. And they care more about who's on first base in the game. They care more about who's winning on ESPN than they do about who's winning the war for our minds that we have unfolding in front of our eyes every day of the week. My friends, you let me know. Does this even matter to you? Should I be talking about what Hollywood ho got divorced today instead? Is that more interesting to people? Do I want to listen to that Drek garbage so I can lose more brain cells? Who knows? Maybe I'm out of touch. But let me know. Do you even care about these things? The history of Islam? Do you care about the history of regions that are now under conflict? You let me know. Until then, I look forward to hearing from you. I gotta get ready to go to the gym here pretty soon. If you don't go to the gym, I'd recommend doing it. Eating well and getting stronger and looking better is the best revenge in uncertain times. Take care of yourselves. I'm out of here. Peace.